Hello and welcome to the second episode in the series of conversations with the Barbados Kidney Association. I'm your host Jason Bell, and with me today for this fascinating conversation on one type of dialysis is President of the Barbados Kidney Association, Mrs. Celianne Cisnett. Hello, Celianne.
Thanks for welcoming me back.
And Sabrina Newton, we have you here again. You're the Public Relations Officer, PRO, of the organization.
Yes, please. Thanks for having us back.
And of course, we have Mr. Adrian Boyce, Vice President of the BKA.
Happy to see you. Happy to be here. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So before we even hit the record button on this conversation, y'all had my eyes open and my mouth dropped agape. My jaw was almost on the floor talking about all the things related to hemodialysis, which is the one type of dialysis we are going to be talking about today. As you may have heard last time, listeners, there's two types of dialysis. There is hemodialysis, and then there is PD dialysis. So if you can just go through with us what the two types are, and then we can go down the road talking about hemodialysis.
The two types of dialysis, hemodialysis, which is exchanging the blood with a machine that then cleans the blood of toxins
right.
and reintroducing it to the patient. That's right. done in the hospital under the care of nurses. And there is peritoneal or PD dialysis, which is done at home with a machine that is hooked up to you through an organ or gland in the peritoneum, in the stomach of the patient. So just to quickly recap from our first segment, again, we are the Barbados Kidney Association. We have about 400 persons on dialysis, right. which is stage 5 kidney failure. We have 20,000 to 30,000 persons just walking around
in Barbados,
between stages 1 and stage 4 of kidney disease, because again, it's a silent killer, silent disease. Not many symptoms, if any, persons right. might experience right. until they reach end stage renal disease. We talked about causes of kidney disease. We have lifestyle causes, which is diabetes. Hypertension is the most prevalent cause of kidney disease. Heart failure as well. You can get kidney disease from infections, like our vice president spoke about. Hantavirus, which is incredibly rare, but incredibly dangerous as in fatal as well. Persons have genetic diseases, like polycystic kidney disease, which can then cause kidney disease. And autoimmune diseases like right. lupus, as well as long-term uses of medications like ibuprofen or Advil, Motrin, those kind of things.
Right.
So we then spoke about, again, look at reducing your salt and sugar intake, monitor your blood pressure and your blood sugar, exercise, eat well, balanced diet, limit processed foods, the bacon and the hamburgers that you don't make yourself, smoking, a high risk factor, drinking water. A lot of persons, we realize, don't drink enough water. And again, get your annual checkup. That's the easiest thing to do. And you can get a free kidney function test from Forlum Foundation. They will tell you where you are and how well your kidneys are functioning.
Right. So F-O-R-L-A-M, Forlum Foundation. You can find it on your smartphone and they will have the number there for you. And you can check them out online. To get an appointment. And then you go, I understand, there in Camden Village, right there in St. Michael. And yeah, nice and central, so everyone can have access to the free kidney function test.
Yes, please.
So, with that wonderful recap, thank you, Madam President, let us talk about hemodialysis. Now, one of the three of you has the experience of going down the regular hemodialysis line, but two of you, one other of you has had the experience of hemodialysis, and all three of you have seen like the pros and the cons of hemodialysis.
Yes.
So, Sabrina, please tell us a little bit, if you can, about your experience. I'll give you about 2-3 minutes to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I know that there's a lot of questions that are burning, if in myself, far less the listeners. So, please tell us a little bit about your story.
Okay, so as I previously said, I have a hereditary disease, polycystic kidneys. I found out when I was 21, and from the age of 21 up until 37, I was between stage 1 and 4, and I had it pretty much under control. But then when COVID stepped in, this is where we start to see a regression of disease, and that sent me into end-stage renal failure. Then we realized that I was still retaining the water. As Sadie said, it stops you from breathing well. So at night, I couldn't lay down to sleep because it felt like I was drowning internally. So as you lay down, it just feels like this whole mass of water is in your chest. So I had to sleep sitting up for a long time. When I got to the doctor, he said, yes, well, we are getting there. So he made the appointment for me to get my access to do hemodialysis, which is a fistula. Usually, if it is emergent, where that it is needed right away, you get a catheter. But once you have time, because a fistula takes a while to mature, it takes 3 months to mature. So
it's a train, so to speak.
Right.
Basically, your body is learning how to exchange blood with the machine, I presume?
Yes. What it is, it joins an artery to a vein.
Wow.
And that makes like what they call a super vein, so that the blood can flow properly through at that high rate, because it comes out of your body at a high rate, so it doesn't damage the vein itself.
Right.
So the fistula is created with a minor outpatient surgery. It takes about an hour. You are awake. The fistula is usually in your hand, and your non-dominant hand, because it is something that cannot be bothered, so to speak. Right. As in, on that hand, no, you can't take blood from there. You can't use a blood pressure machine, and you certainly can't get it damaged, you know, like you gotta
put strenuous work on that.
Nothing, you can't lift anything heavy with it or anything like that.
Right.
So, after they do the fistula surgery, then you know you have to let it mature, and that takes, as I said, about 3 months. So, about January 2023, I was starting dialysis.
Right, so 3 years ago, approximately.
Yeah,
so hemodialysis, I understand, is a multiple times a week appointment for you.
Yes, please.
So you go to the QEH, I presume?
No. The QEH outsources dialysis treatments at the SILS Barbados centers. Mm-hmm. There's one in Warrens, there's one in Belleville, and there's one in St. John.
Okay.
So I go to SILS in Belleville, and I go 3 days a week for 4 hours.
You look at Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday?
Yes, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
And what can you do, or what happens in that process?
You can sit still.
So this has really affected your life. This is a life kind of transforming sort of thing.
Yes, it is.
So, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So take us through a typical appointment with SILS. And so you walk into Belleville. Hi, good morning. How are y'all doing?
Yes.
I presume you have to go in the morning.
Well, there are three shifts. The first shift is at 4 o'clock. But some people generally get there by 3 because the nurses are there early, setting up and whatever else. So the earlier you get there...
So 4 in the morning.
4 in the morning, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Still dark.
Yeah. Right. Dark and early.
Dark and early, yes. Yeah. So then you add 4 hours to 4, and that's 8 o'clock. So that's the next shift.
Right.
And then the next one is about 12.
Right.
12:30, 1 o'clock, the last, because they finish at 4. It's a 12-hour shift that the nurses do.
Right.
So by 4 o'clock, you're finishing up if you're on the last shift.
Right.
Yeah.
So you get there nice and early,
yes,
say, for example, and you get seated. I presume there's a nice, comfortable bed, similar to how you do if you're donating blood.
Pretty much. It's a chair that lounges back, but before you do that, you have to wait to see how much fluid you have to take off, because that is a factor. Yes,
okay.
It's not only toxins you're taking from your body, you're also taking the fluid, because most kidney patients doesn't pass urine anymore. So it's not functioning, so it's nothing is coming out, so it has to come out through the blood. So you have to wait to see what you weigh at the point. You have a dry weight, which is what is the optimal weight for you when all of the fluid is off your body. So you would make the calculations and say, well, for instance, if you come in at 69 kilograms and your dry weight is 67, then you know you have to take off 2 kilograms, but you have to also add in for saline, because when you are returning your blood, it is returned with saline. So you have to factor that in so that you don't go home with extra fluid on your
bike. This is the point where my mouth is really dropping up on this. You are saying not just your own blood is exchanging machine,
mm-hmm.
the clear fluid
yes.
that you see at the clinic
yes,
or the hospital, some of that is returned into your body.
Yes,
and you have to do a calculation
for that.
Is
yes.
that
meticulous? Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And so after that calculation is done, they set you up. I presume one needle is used?
Two needles are used. That's for the fistula. So there is an arterial needle, which is the one that pulls the blood, and there's a venous needle that is the one that puts back the blood. You also have to do your blood pressure before you start as well. And during the treatment as well, every half an hour or hour, you have to check your blood pressure to see that it is not tanking out, because again, removing blood, that causes your blood pressure to dip a little bit. It's like a fight or flight mode. If you get a cut, it goes into shock, right?
Yeah.
So they have to always be checking your blood pressure every hour, every half an hour, to make sure that you are not crashing out.
Yeah, because I heard you use the term tanking out.
Yeah.
And then you just use the term
crashing out. Yes.
Which is another connotation for some young people.
But yeah.
The term, the context of hemodialysis,
mm-hmm.
that is when your blood pressure drops off precipitously, you could lose consciousness.
Yes, yeah. Yes, you actually do if it goes too low, and then this is another time that they will have to give you a bolus of saline, which is squeeze the bag of saline so that you get a lot. So then that has to be factored in now when they're before the ending, that you know you have to take off that as well, because you put that in to bring back the patient or to, you know.
Right. So this is obviously something that you kind of knew may have been coming. This was not an emergency situation.
Right, yeah. So like I said, when he realized it was at stage four, he said, let us get the fistula, because that is what would be needed. And it's the better access because it poses less risks.
Right.
The catheter now, which is a tube, it goes either in your chest straight to your heart, and it has two tubes where it's the same venous and the
arterial,
but it doesn't use a needle. You just screw it on and it go from there. But
right.
Yeah.
So Adrian, you were telling us earlier that you had, because of your emergency situation at for a time, you were on hemodialysis.
Yeah. At the time I had, you know, had some symptoms
coming
off of December. Everything, it was bitter.
Yeah.
Felt very lethargic. Didn't have much energy, was sleeping all the time. Anytime I ate something, it would bring it back up, couldn't hold it down. I was cold all the time. I was covered up in a comforter. And outside was hot. So then I went to Dr. Bell's clinic, outpatient's clinic at the hospital, because she was working on my renal failure from 2012 or so when I had contracted a hantavirus. But I went to her clinic, I had to do some blood work. And the results showed that my blood was extremely toxic.
Right.
So immediately, the same very Thursday, I had a vas cath put in, which is a catheter to has
directly put into the jugular. You pointed at your neck. So you're saying it was placed
right in the jugular.
Right in your jugular vein.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because that's what the other one may have.
Of course, of course.
So it, you know, had it on the neck itself, as Sabrina had mentioned. There's the arterial and then there's the venous.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one for output, one for input, right? And that was my access for hemodialysis, because it was emergency. You need to get the body cleaned.
ASAP.
Yeah.
Right.
It's only then after we talked to Bell and myself were talking about peritoneal dialysis, and until the surgery could have been scheduled, I was doing the hemodialysis for that period of time.
Right.
Whilst in hospital.
Right.
Yeah.
And we will leave the PD discussion for next time.
Yeah.
But this has been an absolutely fascinating conversation. Thank you so much, Sabrina, for sharing a tiny bit, because I know you weren't able to go into all the details
of
your own experience with hemodialysis as an ongoing hemodialysis patient. But thank you, Celia. Thank you so much, Sabrina. Thank you so much, Adrian, for sharing that piece at the end as to how you had to access hemodialysis in an emergency situation. This has been another fascinating conversation. I've been your host, Jason Bell. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you for having us.
The previous segment was brought to you in association with the Barbados Kidney Association.